Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with
Dan,
Chris,
and Lee.
We've got more news, so we've come back.
Yeah, we're back again.
Yeah, this silence pre-testing schedule, it's really working well for us, isn't it?
Yeah,
Not really.
No.
Fooled you.
Yeah, so much for a winter break. We'll have one during the summer instead.
Formula One has a summer break.
So why can't we?
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Basically, we're just lonely and desperate for attention.
You're not meant to tell them that.
Maybe a touch of human kindness once in a while.
So please tweet us at Three Legs, Four Wheels. Email us. Pop around and have a cup of tea. Just let us know that you're out there.
Just embrace me.
We'll supply the biscuits. Well, the biscuits are available. Oh, no, I don't need to say that.
No, that's true.
Tell you what, we'll talk about F1 instead.
Do that.
What have we got on the first thing? Renault.
Oh, yes!
I thought we'd said we could shut up about
that. Can I guess?
Go on.
Everything's running completely smoothly. It's all running to plan. There are no problems within the Renault camp.
Yes!
Except for...
Oh.
Slight shortfall of approximately $30 million. Pastor / Pudvisa haven't paid up.
Pudvisa?
Pudvisa.
Pudvisa.
Venezuela petrol.
What does it stand for? Petrol, dimension, Venezuela, South Africa.
Pasta doesn't seriously very active.
Pasta destroys very stupid vehicles.
Yeah.
Pasta demands very stupid accidents.
Yes!
Oh, pasta disaster. Very surprised again.
Except we weren't.
Yeah, roughly translated into English is lap one, turn one.
Yeah. But are we going to see the pasta disaster happening this season, or is the disaster going to happen? Because there is no money coming in from his sponsors, and will we be seeing K-Mag in the black and gold?
I think yes.
Because I believe it may be yellow and... No, it can't be yellow and gold.
That would be
yellow
rubbish.
Black. Yeah.
Oh, what was black and gold last season?
Yellow
is the new gold.
Yeah.
No, yellow is the new black, and black is the new gold.
And after one particularly drunken weekend seeing a half-completed advertising hoarding, Snickers was the new name for Scotland, but I'm not sharing that one on the podcast.
Was it Mile 7 that was sponsoring Renault when it was yellow and blue?
No, that was Benetton. That was just after the Benetton buyout. That was light blue and white.
What was the blue part of the yellow and blue Renault that Alonso won all the championships in?
It was mainly sort of bluey... Sort of
there. Yeah, but what was the sponsor that made the blue?
That was Benetton. They carried over the sponsorship.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Because that was my favourite colour, Renault. I thought it was a lovely colour. There.
But yeah, Mile 7 was the light blue on the air boxes usually.
Yeah.
But now that Nostalgia Hour was finished, K-Mag's had a tour of the factory, and there's rumours flying around that if the sponsors don't pay up. He will get the drive.
He's the best option, isn't he? Really, if you're a shortfall and from a driver, and you don't think that one of them's going to fulfil their contract, you need another driver.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they could go to Formula E, and I don't know, say Poch, Nelson, Piquet Jr.
Don't think they'll do that for some reason.
Why would you say
I believe he left under. Less than good terms.
But if they want a driver that can crash...
If you want a driver that is a team player, then Nelson is your man.
For about 9 months afterwards.
Until he decides that he didn't get what he wanted out of the team and thinks that it's a
complain!
To be fair, I think Nelson Piquet gets a bit of a bad rap there because it was more of a cauldron of assholes, more than one.
Yeah,
on his own.
But Alonso wasn't involved.
No, of course
he never is.
No, just like he wasn't involved in Spygate either.
Yeah, because let's face it, Alonso wouldn't have to know exactly what was going on in that. He knows when to push. But
and he wasn't involved during the last season when the McLaren kept breaking down.
GP2.
But
just quickly though, when you say about best options, I'd put, as far if I had a Formula One team now and I had to get a driver which has already driven a Formula One car, John Eric Verne's your man.
John Eric Verne, yeah, or
but Del Ferrari, it's not happen. Del Ferrari on him.
Currently.
But
K Mag is contractless when it comes to Formula One. So for me, I think he would be the go to driver. If you were looking for, if you had a short notice to grab a driver quickly for the 2016 season, Kevin Magnussen is probably the one you would go for. I would think.
Why?
He's available. He's desperate, and he's probably got some sponsorship behind.
He's
him.
Got one. Well, no, because that's why.
And he is pretty quick.
Well, no, he had one mediocre season. He had one good race.
He had a couple of good races.
I think he's a real gamble. I think he's better than Pastor, obviously, and it would be a better team than Pastor. It would probably be a move forward for Renault to have two. At least two drivers that we think deserve to be in Formula 1, because I do believe Kevin Magnussen deserves another go at Formula 1, but I don't believe he's the safe bet, Joe. So he could equally go there and be brilliant, or Heikki Kovalainen it all over the place.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be going in as number one driver as well, won't it?
We have to, because
Julian Palmer's just not experienced enough.
No, but the guys in Rose raced a car for 12 months. If this was...
That was Pastor.
Well, yeah. But if this was like last year, where Kevin Magnussen had been in McLaren and he got sacked, then I'd totally agree with you. But he's had a year out, he had a shit season with McLaren... And I don't think either of them were apart from the fact that obviously Kevin Magnussen's driven races before. I don't think either of them would go into the season with an advantage over each other. If anything, I think the competitive year that Julian Palmer had in GP2, where he was actually racing to win races, is more valuable than Kevin Magnussen's year in McLaren.
Let's start one of our three legs four wheels rumours anyway. And Alain Prost's going to be a director of the Renault team, so why don't you just bring Nico in, because that's the only way to get him into Formula 1.
Nico Prost we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Not Nico Prostberg.
Not Prostberg.
both of remarkably nice temperaments.
You can't do that, Nico, because then we'd have too many Nicos.
Two is possibly the limit.
Yeah. Nico Hülkenberg.
Nico Rosberg.
Unusually common name, it would appear.
Nico Prost.
Hang on, Nico Prostenberg.
you think that's bad? I supported a team where at one point in 2008 we had two strikers and they were both called Paul Robinson. Man, did that get confusing.
Yeah, that is, was one of them out of Neighbours?
No, they had a full complement of legs between them.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, two, more than the average. If you think about it, the average number of legs in the world is less than two. Because if you take all the legs in the world and divide it by the number of people in the world, some people have less than two legs, so the average works out at less than two.
If you're talking about the mean, the median and the modal number of legs is two.
It was on QI.
QI weren't being precise. Stephen Fry, up your game, mate.
Did he leave QI? Yes.
Sandy Toksvig, up your game, mate.
Luke, you've glazed over. Let us know you're still with us.
Yeah, I'm in the same boots as the fucking listeners at the moment.
We'll move on. Manner of past the crash test.
Well, hey.
The FIA mandated rear crash test, which... If Pastor's not driving this season, does it have to be as stringent as it has been in previous years?
Like anything's going to hit the back of a manor.
Somebody lapping them.
Good point. Yeah. Happens to, yeah, actually, they get overtaken more than anybody else.
Hang on a second. Who did hit the back of a manor?
Grosjean.
Yeah, Grosjean hit the back of a manor. That's right. So a Lotus did hit the back of a manor. And if I remember rightly, Will Stevens called him a Muppet. Yeah.
No, it's called it. It's probably, I've got a map it at me tramping.
Got a map it at me tramping.
So that is good news for Manor, because, I mean, things are happening with them as well, because they've just taken on the aerodynamicist they've got from Ferrari.
Yeah, Nikos Tombazis has just signed. I don't know why he left Ferrari. There's something
He was sacked.
he was sat. Yeah, I was going to say something. It was under circumstances. You know, not. It wasn't amicable. Put it that way. It was one of those sort of.
It was because they were doing crap. But they sacked half the team at the time. He wasn't the only one.
No, but I mean,
was it the big clear out when Arriva Benny came? Or
yes,
he didn't arrive well with him then.
No, he didn't arrive well. With
him. Let's face it, even an idiot Ferrari is better than the genius at Manor. You know, it all filters down.
Well, maybe they've hired him because he knows how to shave the corners off Lego to make it more aerodynamic. My chances of getting anything out of that team are rapidly diminishing. Look, we still get the press releases, so we'll carry on being nice about them.
Yeah, it's
carry on being nice about them.
It's
that puts me in
out
of style.
Positive move from Manor.
It is.
Of course, they've had, you know, I won't say a tumultuous winter, but they've had a winter where it's uncertain in the public eye because Graham Booth and John Loudon have gone, and did they get somebody else in yet to run the team?
They have people running the team, but they wanted a team principal. They wanted Alex Wirtz, and he said that he wasn't up for it, or didn't want to do it, or they haven't asked me officially.
First.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to sign, former Ferrari aerodynamicist, regardless as whether or not that he's from an era at Ferrari when things weren't great, is good news for them. It is good news for the team.
He's from an era when Ferrari were good, and then weren't good.
Well, so he knows he had to be good at some point.
Yeah. And if he's had experience in being good, to be brutally honest, it's more than Manor have had in their entire career. So
the only thing is, though, we've got to think, I mean, they could get, they could sign Adrian Newey, for instance, but if Adrian Newey doesn't have the budget in which to design with and to use, then, you know, it's pointless, isn't it?
I think Adrian Newey can do far more with a pencil and a bit of paper than most people can.
It was an extreme. Do you know what I mean? If they haven't got the budget to develop the car, then it doesn't matter how many pretty drawings somebody's making if they can't build them.
True, but there's talk of other drivers coming in to replace the three from last season.
Well, who have we got then? Who's in the talks? I know that Will Stevens has been given was that 30 million?
No, 10.
10 million.
He was told raise 10 million and he can come and race for us next year because he has first refusal on a seat if he can come up with the money. Xander Rossi, X-Man.
Zedberg.
Yeah. De Rossi. Has, the one that's not Valentino, has been told that he could have a seat, as has Rio Haryanto, GP2 driver. I think he's Malaysian, isn't he, Haryanto?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's somebody else who can't
remember. I think Roberto Meri is still in the reckoning, but it's unlikely that he'll be able to raise the money.
Oh, wasn't there another GP2 driver that was in the firing line for it as well?
Possibly, but it's definitely Rio Haryanto.
I keep thinking Johnny Cicotta, but it's not.
No, no, it's not Johnny Cicotta.
Renault, go on, do it.
I don't understand the. I mean, maybe things will be different next year. I don't think things will be different next year. I think the gap will be smaller. I think they'll probably be closer to the rest of the tail of the field by a second, maybe. But I still think you're looking at lapped all over the place.
Yeah, they're not going to be the 4 or 5 seconds a lap down that they were.
There might be two. But
even if they've halved it, that's good news for Manor.
But yeah, no, it's good news for Manor, but I don't understand the spending of all these millions of pounds to drive for Manor. I understand it's in Formula One. I understand that there is racing drivers out there that have the financial backing behind them, be it family money or sponsors that are particularly interested in them in the case of Alexander Rossi.
Yeah.
But I don't understand when the idea was, it used to be, if we take Minardi, I know I've spoke about Minardi with this for quite a long time with this stuff, but is to come into Formula One when you have the opportunity to make an impact in that sort of like pretty shabby car, do it, and then people would notice.
Yeah.
But I don't believe Manor gives people the opportunity to be noticed.
If I just want to say quickly with Jules Bianchi,
Everybody crashed. Do you remember when Giubianchi got his points?
Yeah.
It was such an accident. You know, that anybody could have been in that car and scored those points.
He fought very, very hard.
But anybody could have been in there, and it was just the luck of the situation.
It was, but he did manage to force a Sauber out of the way and genuinely overtook a few cars in Monaco when you shouldn't. But yeah, you're right. The point that he got was...
it was one of those things that could only happen at Monaco.
Yeah, it was down to a lot of luck. But
a lot of drivers wouldn't have been able to make the most of it and would have not got that.
Giubianchi was a Ferrari driver... who had to get his foot in the door somewhere, and Manor provided him with the opportunity to be in Formula One. Fair enough, he was right at the back all the time with Manor. But he got to show some of his talent,
mm-hmm.
and before his accident, people still were talking about the fact that he would probably be a Ferrari driver one day.
There was talks of it, but I don't think there was ever anything proved there that would have been a thing.
No, but...
I think there's a lot of hindsight now because of his accident.
It provides younger drivers, when they need to get their foot in the door and they're looking at bigger teams... The problem you've got there is that the conversion rate is so small.
Mm-hmm.
You look at teams like Caterham. The one driver who went to Caterham and then left to go to another team is Marcus Ericsson. He's the only driver that did that.
Yeah. Technically, Gato van der Gaard. But no.
And, well...
He went to another team.
And technically, Heikki Kovalainen, when he was their reserve driver for the year that he was the reserve, and then ended up at Lotus replacing Raikkonen for the last two races.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's not serious either. The only driver who ever left Caterham and went on to better things, if you want to say things, is Marcus Ericsson. He's the only one who's done that. And... so the conversion rate for drivers coming from a back of the grid team to then go on to something else is very small. But they've got to give it a go. They've got to have the chance to show their talents and to see what they can do.
But I mean, you talk about sort of, you know, Minardi was the small team that occasionally made an impact and they were valid in the races. But when Minardi started out, look at all the other absolute no mark teams that they were fighting with for
the last two
spots on the grid when qualifying actually meant trying to qualify for the race.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could go through a list like Pacific, Simtek, Leighton House,
40.
There's got to be some, you know, there's plenty
footwork.
Footwork.
Although they did score points.
But even if we don't go back that far, and we just go back to.
Alonso started in Minardi.
Yeah, Mark Webber started in Minardi, late 90s area. But Alonso and Mark Webber both scored a point in Australia in the first races for Minardi.
In a similar vein to what you're saying about Jules Bianchi, that was back in the days when you got a lot of retirements at the first race.
I'll give you that.
The cars haven't been shaken down properly, and it was also around about the time when there was a limitless number of engines for the teams, and they were pushing the engines too far because there weren't as many restrictions on what you could do with them, and engines were letting go. Mm-hmm. Now you see the big plume of smoke and a car coast to a halt, and it's a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to the late 90s, and you saw it four or five times a race.
Yeah. Usually a Stewart.
Usually.
And there's only two of them. Or usually four times.
The BAR, when the back wing didn't fall off.
Yeah, the back wing didn't fall off, or they didn't have their car in two completely different liveries.
Yeah, both having the same accident.
Yeah, in Belgium.
Yeah.
Identical.
Try that, it's fun.
I think that just quickly there, I know it's not really what we're talking about, but I've always thought that was a mistake for Formula One, not allowing BAR to use the two separate liveries for the two separate cars, because think of where Formula One would be now in relation to sponsorship if the two cars could run separate liveries, because in that case you'd have, as far as your like getting paid drivers that come in with sponsorship, different drivers could come in with different sponsorships.
That was a bit of a
Lewis Hamilton would have the Beats Mercedes for instance.
Yeah, but I mean that was a bit of a different thing because there were two different SIG brands from the same company.
Yeah, no, but I think it would have set a good precedent for the future if they allowed it. Because I think they decided not to do it because it was an aesthetic thing, didn't they?
It's something to do with the accessibility. Like, a team has to look like a team.
Yeah, but I think it would have looked better in the end because you'd have been, as far as people know what's going on, the cars would have been more recognisable per driver. You know, if each driver had their own livery.
No, rather than a red or a yellow stripe on top of the camera.
It's got to be better than helmets, isn't it?
Yeah, but the clamp down with it on helmets, and you've got to have the same one through the season because you couldn't even tell what driver was what from race to race because everyone had a different helmet every time, just about.
Yeah,
Sebastian Vettel didn't help us with that one, did he? Different helmet every single race for
2013. Well, he retired a helmet design after he won.
Yeah.
He kept a helmet going until he won a race.
A different helmet almost every
race. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, no.
But that was almost. Although it stops people being able to work out who the drivers are if you keep swapping helmets, but it was only really Vettel that was doing it all the time, and that made me realise who which one Vettel was because he always had a different
one. I don't recognise.
He looks different from last time.
That was almost his thing, just having a different design.
But also, he was the one at the front.
Yeah, that
usually helps.
That you saw at the beginning of the race.
Out of DRS within the first 2 seconds, that'll be the guy.
Yeah.
What we got next? You've written down Todd and engines.
They're having a meeting, the FIA.
Because they still don't know what 2017 is going
to
be.
Well, it's just to finalise the rules, and Jean Todt has said that he's extremely confident that they can basically rubber stamp the final rules on the engines. There's still a few bodywork and aerodynamic issues that are
all of them.
Not all of them, just mainly the length of the chassis, the floor pan design, and
the width.
No, they're fine with the width. The track is going to remain at 2,000 millimeters. Changing back to 2 meters from 1,800 as it is at the moment.
Oh right, because last time I looked yesterday, that was still all up in the air.
Yeah, they want to stick with that. They're going to want to just push on, go ahead with that. And
but then Pat Simmons goes and says, "Oh, can't we delay it a year?"
Yeah, because Pat Simmons is, I think it's because he's fearful that Williams will fall behind because they haven't started developing 2017 cars yet. That's just my conspiracy theory with Lee's tinfoil hat on.
I won't rattle the tinfoil this time because it's very noisy.
It's horrible.
We'll leave that to Podcat eyeing up the biscuits.
But the thing is, it doesn't actually matter what the teams and the FIA are discussing about what the regulations are going to be. It's going to be whatever Ferrari says it's going to be.
Yeah, but they'll veto what they don't.
They
want,
need that power of veto taken off them.
They put it to a vote to see if they could get it taken off. And Ferrari vetoed it. Ferrari vetoed it. Yes.
It's. I've got a funny feeling that it's not. The more I read about the 2017 rules, and you see like the humming and hawing that's going on around what's going to happen, like if it's going to happen. How much quicker the cars will be or won't be. I wonder whether this is going to be that more pivotal to Formula One than just changing the rules. If the teams can't decide what's going on between them without bickering, the whole sport could fall apart here.
The teams have never been able to decide between them what's going on.
Yeah, well, realistically, it shouldn't be up to the teams what it is. They should be given a set of rules of which to work around, and they should do it.
But that would make sense.
Yeah, well, yeah. I understand there's a lot of money involved in Formula One, but there's a lot of money in sport, and we don't seem to see this like in other sports as much. You know, as in the inmates calling the shots.
Yeah, like you don't see Man United and Liverpool being like, well, we want this to change the offside rule and we're not playing the game unless you say...
At a time, multi-ball.
Would be awesome.
I don't know, Man United always seem to get the rules changed in their favour whenever Howard Webb was refereeing, but apart from
that.
I've always thought I'd watch football if there was... A land
at a time multi-ball.
No, a landmine, just one. I'm not some sort of crazy maniac.
Really?
Yeah.
You're sat in a revolving chair stroking a cat right this second.
With your fingers steepled.
Yeah, it's not looking good for
you. It's not, is it? But just one landmine placed randomly, like, the day before, by one person who was allowed in, allowed in on his own. We'd have to make it quite small, you know, so you couldn't see where it would be. We'd make it some sort of nice slot-in mechanism.
It could be on the pitch, it could be under a seat.
But it's not just the fact that the landmine's there, because obviously like the players running all over it, so you know it's going to go off within the first couple of minutes, unless it gets activated at a random time during the football match.
When one of the players slows below 50 miles an hour.
Yeah. So, and whichever team, it would be like a double-edged sword. Because whoever's team blows the landmine up, they get a goal, but they lose a play.
Okay. I have a message to the FIA. Please, 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 don't take any advice from Lee. The rule changes.
Bernie... Sit down.
I was just saying, right now, Bernie's there going, this Lee character, he is a guy I can get on board with.
Yeah, you know when
he's crossing out sprinklers.
You know when Ron Dennis said, look outside Formula One for the next... for the next set of Formula One.
Yeah, look out Formula One.
Yeah.
Bernie Eccleston stood there going, bring me this boy, I shall buy him.
Yes.
I think we'll move on.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think we really should.
But seriously, Bernie, you could buy
me. Right, okay, so we've just been talking about things that explode.
I don't like landmines, by the way. I'm just going to point that out there. I'm not associated.
Talking about things that explode? Whoa, when I mean Bernie's going to buy me, not for that. No. Just for my advice.
I was segueing on from landmines and things that explode, because next on the running
order... Well, make sure segs is the only thing you're weighing. Carry on.
I don't know how to follow that. They're talking about bringing back refuelling again. It must be January.
Yeah, they are talking about bringing back refuelling again, like they did last year, and then they did this big looking into it and decided it was a bad idea.
Dan's got a point to make.
No, 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 no.
That was a point.
Yeah, I'm with Dan, actually.
Yeah, yeah, we don't need more fire.
I'm not bothered about it. It was took out for cost, really. It was done under the guise of safety, but it was took out for
cost. It's fairer to start everybody the same weight or similar weight with a full car of fuel.
Is it? I think it is. When different engines have different fuel efficiency, you know.
Well, it's down to the engine manufacturers to make the car as fuel efficient as possible.
You look at the fuel used statistics, like partway through the race, it's 0.2 of a kilogram between the top and the bottom of the field.
The only thing I would say is the fact that the cars could start lighter and they could essentially be lighter throughout the race. And if it means that you would have cars on the edge more, going as quick as those cars could possibly go, then I'm all for it. Rather than this fat fuel thing, beginning of the race, you know, if it means that from lap one, they're getting close to qualifying times, you know, closer without being so far off the pace, and I realise you're still gonna have. The cars are still going to have just enough fuel to cross the finish line, because any extra fuel doesn't make any sense. But if it means less lift and coasting, and like I say, more aggressive race strategies, then I'm diggity down.
But as we were talking about beforehand, there's still lifting and coasting going on. They just don't call it that anymore because they've taken an absolute pounding of the teams.
Well, that's it. I think so.
Lift and coast messages.
I think so. The conspiracy theory having it, but I think there's been someone saying, like, we as a sport are losing viewers, and we can't have our image like this. We're supposed to race.
I know that I've always argued that Formula One, you know, is a prototype formula, and that it has to sort of replicate sort of road cars or what road cars are about in a way, hence why they've had to go to this sort of hybrid system, because that's the way all road cars are going. But it's a sport. And if anybody wanted to see anybody fuel saving, go and stand on a bridge over the M25.
Yeah.
You know, and have a look at all the people driving sensibly. Oh, I'm getting 49 miles per gallon because I'm driving sensibly.
You've never seen people on the M25, have you?
I have.
Doing nearly 3 miles an hour.
When you've got drivers like Lewis Hamilton. 2 in the morning,
perhaps you might be moving it, but more than 15.
Yeah, but when you've got drivers like Lewis Hamilton on the grid, that halfway through a race are being told to save fuel and are radioing in going, I literally cannot drive any slower.
Yeah.
That's not Formula
1. I'm pretty sure he could drive slower.
Yeah, but
was it Felipe Massa who said in Monaco, I've been driving like my granny out there?
Yeah, yeah. It's not Formula 1. That isn't Formula 1. You know, it's not Formula 1. It shouldn't be. So if it brings an end to that, I'm all for it. I don't know why it would be such a bad thing bringing refueling back in the back, because if I'm honest, I don't think it should have been got rid of in the first place.
No, I think it made it better when it was gotten rid of.
Why?
Because it made everything closer. Refueling, you had to talk. Refueling became a game of maths. You had to sit there and work out, well, he's put 14 laps of fuel in, and he's put 6 laps of fuel in.
The only difference is the margins are smaller. They're still working to the same template. They just know that instead of having...
Ted has to use midget gems instead of bonbons.
Yeah, instead of having, say, 20 seconds in the pits. So I'm making a number up.
They know it's
10 seconds now. You know, so it's that the only difference is that the pit strategies are still the same. It's just the margins.
No, they're not. That's the thing, because you can find somebody putting in starting a race on a really, really light amount of fuel. They're doing really well.
But then they're not. Do you not think it's made instead of the pit stops where people would go fucking crackers on their in laps, you know, to try and make the time up. It's swapped it round because now all of a sudden the undercut has come up, because there was never, before we got rid of refueling, the undercut was never as important as it is now.
That was going to be my next point, was that if you bring back refueling, it takes away the importance of the tyres that have become such an important part of the sport as well. Because
but aren't we always moaning about the tyres now? Maybe some of the importance of the tyres should be taken away.
No, I'm not moaning. I don't moan about the tyres. The drivers and the teams tend to moan about the tyres quite a lot. But I do feel a bit sorry for Pirelli. They're told to make it harder, so they make it more difficult for the team. They're like, it's too difficult. Make it easier for us.
Yeah.
And they make it easier. It's just like, it's too easy.
The problem
is harder.
The problem with the tyres is the fact that I don't think, apart from what I think we said this last week, didn't we? That apart from the odd driver where like they'll leave Perez out for weeks on a set of tyres, but he's not going fast. You know, he's just managing to keep it on the track for that amount of time.
Mm.
I think there should be if they're going to make tyres degrade, it should be like wear degrading, not like they've got an expiry date. Because that's what it's like. At the minute, all the tyres go off at the same time. So it doesn't matter, does it? If you get a driver like Jensen, he can't do anything to keep those tyres and keep the performance in those tyres for longer, because they've got that cut-off point and then they're gone anyway. And it's the same for him as it is for Lewis Hamilton or Maldonado.
Yeah, well, Hamilton might drive his car a bit harder than Jensen Button, and his tyres might...
The difference is a lap. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm going to say his tyres might only last 4 laps, whereas Jensen's might last 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So you've got to offset I think it comes down to an argument of whether tyre strategy is more exciting than fuel strategy. I think it is.
I would say the fuel strategy is more exciting.
I disagree, because of the amount of just sort of just sitting and waiting that you used to get when refueling was involved. Well, it doesn't matter if we don't overtake them now, because we'll just change our fuel strategy a little bit and just overtake them in the pits.
Yeah, but it was always pretty exciting when you had a car come into the pits, though, and you knew there was another one coming down.
I'd rather see you overtaking out the track.
I'd rather see the pit stops being 2.5-3 seconds like we've got at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and the overtaking being done on the track than...
the pit stops being changed from a 15-second pit stop to a 12-second pit stop in order to get the driver ahead.
But like I said before, would you not prefer to have drivers with light cars on the edge for the whole race?
But
at the end of the day, is that not the biggest?
But we had that before when refueling was in, and basically it turned into, say, a race that's a two stopper.
Yeah.
You get your first two stints, which were effectively qualifying, and it only became a meaningful race after everyone had made their last pit stop, mm-hmm. had got their qualifying positions, then they were racing for finishing position based on how well they'd done in the first two stints.
Yeah.
So it effectively shortened the amount of time that they were racing for.
Yeah.
A 90-minute race, you would only get the last 30 minutes actually being
a
race for position.
To be fair, I don't remember the last sort of 4 years, 5 years of racing with refueling. I don't remember it being a massive problem making things boring, because those years, if we're perfectly honest, was it 2008? Was
2009,
the last,
I think, was the last year of refueling.
I think it was 2008. I think
might be 2008.
Yeah. I'd argue that the 2008 and who was champion in 2007? That would have been
Kimi.
That those 2 years were better than and then it would have been 2 years for Alonso. Yeah.
Mm.
So I'd argue that those 4 years are better than the last 4 years we've had without it. Yeah, they were cracking. They were really good years. The racing was better.
I don't know that the racing was better.
I think the racing was better. I'd say the other thing is, yeah, we get overtaken on track now, but it's not overtaken, is it? It's not like it's always DRS, or 90% of the time it's DRS overtakes.
Yeah, I know what you mean with DRS. DRS is a contentious thing. I don't know whether or not I like the fact that it's available and changes positions, but
it's too powerful. The idea of DRS,
there's no escaping the fact that it's
a slam
artificial
dunk. Yeah. Yeah, all it should be is, and this, I suppose this is crazy maths that would be really difficult to work out, if you've got the it should be enough of a boost to get the cars next to each other, do you know what I mean, next to each other, and then it's up to the driver to do the outbraking, essentially. But now it's just a case of whacking on the straight.
What you really want from DRS, I think, is something that balances out the effect of the dirty air. So
yeah.
So you're not getting people can't overtake because they're in the dirty air.
I'd argue they shouldn't have brought DRS in, and they should have made KERS more powerful.
Well, they have. The KERS now is the ERS.
No, but as a push to pass.
It's constantly on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they've still got push to pass. You hear them sometimes talk about the overtake button.
It's
an ERS boost more than what they're getting now. Like, mm-hmm. so they could drive around for a lap, and you know, when you see the backs of the cars, the lights flashing, they're charging their ERS up. But they've still got an overtake button where they can basically
hit that. They get an extra 100 horsepower for 10 seconds or something.
Yeah. Goes into strat 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If
you don't do that, we'll tell Nico.
Yeah. But KERS was when it was KERS before it was, you know, the hybrid 2014 formula as it is now. That was questioned at the time as well, as sort of how artificial, or
See, I didn't mind that, because like loads of different forms of racing have had push to pass buttons for ages. Yeah, Formula One used to have push to pass buttons, didn't they, at one point? Like years and years ago.
Yeah, there was like a booster.
Like in the
first turbo era.
Yeah.
There was an extra boost that they could have. I'm pretty sure.
And
yeah.
They could only run it for so long, but it was more fuel limited, I think, wasn't it, than actually governed. They couldn't use it too many times, because if they use it too many times, they would just go without fuel.
Perhaps would it not be more sensible to limit the amount of DRS use, instead of getting it every lap if you're within a second on a certain stretch? Perhaps you only get to press it a certain amount of times during the race, and if you want to use it to defend, you can.
But then it's even more of a game, isn't it? It's even more artificial if you only get so many rolls of the dice.
Oh, how about if you've got a car within one... if you've got a car within 1 second of you either way, ahead or behind, you can use DRS.
Yeah, because then, that makes it useless.
Then it evens things out.
Then you might as well not have it.
Yeah, I see both sides of it there, yeah.
Yeah. I think it depends if using the DRS to defend would reduce the amount of dirty air hitting the car that's attacking.
Mm.
Then, no, it's not a case of balancing things out as if you had no DRS. It would...
advantage still, car in front.
It would still work to help overtaking.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying with the, you know, whether, you know, if you had, say, for example, you could use it 20 times during a race or something like that, and you've used yours, like, 10 times, and the guy behind you has used his, like, 15 times. He's only got 5 presses left. You've got to try and work out where he's going to do it so you can defend. And if you choose to defend at the wrong time, then...
Well, I wonder how feasible it is then to... Say you got rid of DRS totally, so it's gone, it's out the window. We know we've got all this electric power now, yeah?
Mm.
Yeah.
So we slap, as well as the hybrid stuff we've got there, you then slap an extra battery in the car, which we're going to use as old-fashioned KERS, yeah?
Yeah.
So then, using maths, you work out if a car is a second behind a car, you press your KERS button, and you can only use KERS while you're behind a car. The same way as we're going to use DRS, yeah? Yeah?
Okay.
So then you work out how much extra power it would need to make those cars side by side. So it doesn't matter how much... It's by the time you get side by side, you're out of DRS anyway. So yeah. all it can do is put the cars at the same place on the track. That would promote more exciting overtaking, surely.
It would, yeah, but sometimes if you're already passing and you've got the momentum and your KERS sort of cuts out as you're pulling alongside, you've already got the momentum and you're going to be slightly ahead.
Oh, yeah, but it's going to do its job.
I do movement with hands there.
More than sticking a massive hole in your rear wing and giving you like 50 horsepower in a straight line extra. You know, if it's actually just designed to stick you at the same place on the track, surely that's a better solution. You're listening, Bernie.
Yeah, but doesn't that take away the... but you wouldn't actually be able to do that because the person that you were trying to pass is allowed to make one move to defend the line.
Yeah.
So... You're going faster, and then all of a sudden you have to make a last-minute decision which side to go.
Think about it, it'd be exactly the same as doing a normal overtake. You jink to the left. The other car would make their move to block you off. Then you could go right and then press your push to pass button.
But then you'd only be allowed to hit the push to pass button after the other car had made a defensive move.
Why don't you just take away all these aids?
That's
what I'd prefer.
Actually, yeah, just get rid and have the ability of the cars and the drivers.
I believe is the aim of the 2017 rules to reduce the effect of dirty air on the following cars to make overtaking more natural.
That makes sense, it'll never catch on.
And to reduce the effect of DRS will still be in use, but to reduce the effect.
The rules they're proposing, though, won't do that anyway because it's fucking it's relying more on aerodynamics again.
Yeah, it is, but it should take away the fact that you can't follow somebody in dirty air. Wow. So you should be able to get closer.
Does that mean we'll never hear excuses like Nico's again? He was going too slow for me to pass him.
Yeah.
That's like saying that the grandma in front of you Tesco's was going too slow for you to go around it.
Could have been a granddad, but you said grandma. That's a very misogynist comment. Just like what Bernie's been making.
It wasn't misogynist.
It was typical old man.
Yeah. That was so smooth.
Thanks,
my
dad.
The women in Formula One subject has come up, and Bernie's
women in Formula One balderdash.
Pretty much, yeah. You passed the audition for Bernie's replacement. Actually, no, you just passed the audition for being Bernie.
Yeah, well, I'm doing my best.
And Damon Hill's agreed with him.
I think they've said that these poor creatures are too flighty to be able to drive, and The female brain can't keep up with high speeds or something like
that.
Not
when there's
lines.
So many kitchens around.
Yes.
Yeah.
They'll be thinking about flowers or shoes or something.
Yeah, oh, that rear wing looks like a handbag. I think Bernie is talking an absolute load of hooey.
Hooey. What we need to work out is, yes, obviously Bernie's talking a whole load of hooey. Mm. Is he doing it because that's actually his opinion, or is he doing it because it'll get people like us talking about
it? He's doing it because it'll get people like us talking about it, because it needs to be a debate that is... Well, we decided it wasn't a debate that needed to be opened. But it's going to be opened because somebody who couldn't get into Formula One has now started an initiative to make people get into Formula One.
Well, she kind of got into Formula One, the occasional slot on a Friday morning.
She got into Formula One, she never competed in the, as during a race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
But she didn't deserve. She didn't deserve to be in Formula One. All she did was stopped Alex Lynn getting into Williams a year earlier than he did.
I think Alex Lynn will probably be a Williams reserve driver.
He is this year, but he should have been last year. Arguably, if he'd have been doing it properly last year and maybe some time in the car the year before, he might be in a race driver by now.
Susie Wolf wasn't the reserve driver, she was test and development driver.
She was development driver. The reserve driver was somebody else, I can't remember.
But it was just it was a waste of time, Susie Wolf. She was the epitome of what we don't want from...
I think we've got no basis to say how good she was as a development
fine, but I personally think she was hired for the same reason Carmen Jordan was hired.
But remember...
Looks good in photos.
Yeah, but remember, in pre-season testing, Susie Wolf did take part in quite a bit of the pre-season testing, and her and Felipe Nasser in the Sauber had a coming together at Jerez, and both of them blamed each other.
It did seem to be her fault. She didn't see him, and she just sort of wandered across the track and went and walked into him.
What? She didn't see an anonymous Sauber?
Yes. That's exactly it.
Ideal for Formula One.
The problem is it would be nice to have a woman Formula One driver.
But she has to be good enough.
Has to be good enough. Can't be...
Just because she's a woman.
Yeah. See, I don't want to go into this too much because there's too many people I know that are involved in it with my work. But there's a person I know going for a lecturing job in my line of work, and there's a few different people going for this job. I know the woman is going to get this job because it promotes sexual diversity in the workplace. She's completely unqualified for it. And I don't think that this... I don't want to see this happening to Formula One.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But in an everyday workplace, there's not... I wouldn't say that there's the sporting competition that you would find in Formula One. Everyday workplace are completely different to a sporting environment where it is completely performance based. And it's not just, you know, you go into work, I'm not saying that this is what this job or this person or anything else to do, but you go into work, you do your job, you come home.
It's performance based in that case.
But work is performance based, but it's not competition, it's not constant competition.
I don't know. You've always got to be good, haven't you? Otherwise, you don't keep your seat, for want of better words. But all I'm saying is, I just think that if there was a female driver that was good enough at the minute, I think she'd be there.
Yeah, that's...
And if she wasn't in Formula One, she'd be in LMP1, or she'd be in DTM or IndyCar.
I think it's a case of what's happened in the past, because now you are seeing girls and young women taking up motorsport more.
Yeah,
which is good.
In the lower classes.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, in the lower classes than you have in the past.
Yeah.
And obviously it takes time
to
work up to the pinnacle of the sport.
And yeah. The top and bottom of it is, if you have 100,000 men which are involved in motorsport and you've only got 100 women, the chances of one of those 100 being good enough to get Formula One is less than finding enough people in that 100,000. Yeah.
It's a thousand times less likely.
It's simple numbers, isn't it? Simple math, yeah. I can do.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with ability because you're a woman. It's just ability because you're a driver.
Mm. I do think the idea of the a single seater women's championship is a good idea.
They tried it a few years ago, though. There was the Formula Women series.
Yeah. See, that's a terrible name.
Yeah.
It's a terrible name, but it's. I can see where people are coming from when they disagree with it. I can.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, why can't they compete with the men? They probably could.
Yeah.
But we'll never know unless it's like an equal playing field. And we're not going to get an equal playing field in Formula One unless a woman who is good enough comes into the sport.
Look how long it took us to get a black driver.
I know.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a sport that lets people in easily. But what the thing I think is...
Motor racing has always been for middle class and upper white blokes and their kids.
Yeah. But if you...
That's not the case anymore at the lower levels these days, but up to 10 years ago, that's what it was.
Yeah. Let's say, right, because I don't think they should make a Formula One, women's Formula One championship. Because I think basically it'd be a bit of a waste of money to put that much money into cars just to have this vehicle there.
Yeah, we're only driving it because you're a woman.
Yeah. Whereas I think if you had a single card GP2 teams or something like that with similar cars to GP2 cars, and have that as a women's championship. Because there isn't enough opportunities for women to get into single seater racing.
Yeah, I know, but then you run the risk of why can't women drive the cars that bless you? Why can't women run drive the cars that are as powerful as they are in Formula One in their own championship?
Yeah, well, we don't say that about GP2 drivers. You know, it would be a vehicle for young drivers to get into Formula One.
Yeah,
that it would just be another feeder series. And the way I look at it is, you probably get a load of very good, competent female racing drivers that aren't good enough to get into Formula One. But
just in the same way that in GP2, you get a load of very competent young drivers that aren't good enough to get into Formula One.
And then, after a few years, all of a sudden, you get one girl come through that had win all but one of the races. End up second in the race she didn't win, and then that'd be a case of like Katie Speed, let's get her
Scott
in Formula
Speed's
One.
Sister.
do you know what I mean? That would be, and then if it would be a good way to find that one girl,
female driver. There's a lot of second generation drivers about now. You've got Verstappen, Sainz, we've had Nigel Mansell's. Two young lads are coming through. They're not Formula One, but
Graham Hill's son.
Graham Hill's son, David. Damon's son has actually given up racing.
Yeah.
Julian
Palmer. There's another younger Palmer brother coming through.
Yeah.
Two Brundles, the next generation.
Alex Brundle's coming. Yeah. He's probably not going to be Formula One, but he's going to be top class motorsport somewhere.
Yeah.
We got to remember Martin Brundle was a GT world champion. I think in 19.
He'll drive for the top LMP1 team.
I think Martin Brundle's done every series going except IndyCar. I think.
Yeah, possibly.
He's fucking won everything he's done as well, apart from Formula One.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely. Yeah. But probably the best Formula One driver to have never won a race. In fact, he never even led a race ever. Entire Formula One career, he was never in the lead.
I'd argue Anthony Davidson for that as well. I think he was a guy that wasn't given enough of a chance.
Yeah, but that was in the tumultuous Toyota days.
It was Super Aguirre's fault, wasn't it?
And the I've completely forgotten where I was going with
the second generation drivers coming through.
Second generation drivers. What you need is a second generation driver who is a girl, female.
Yeah. You need no, but then she's got to be good as well. At least the, what I mean well, about
got,
the...
But you've got Michael Schumacher's son, Mick Schumacher, yeah. who has done Formula 4 in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't completely smashed it out of the park, but has been very...
He won his first race.
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was his first race, but he was very, very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he won the second of the first race.
It was a race weekend, wasn't it? I think it was. He won second. His first weekend. But he... Was he only, what was he, 15, 16?
About that, yeah.
Something like that. And he's racing against guys who are in their late teens, early 20s. And, you know, he's held his own. So, but if Mick Schumacher was female,
mm-hmm.
a lot more would have been made about the progress that he's made, or she would have made, in the Formula 4, which I believe Adrian Newey's son is also racing in,
mm-hmm.
European Formula 4, which from there you go on to Renault Euro Cup and then World Series Renault or something like that before getting into GP3 or 2 and then hopefully
I was just going to say I think all of those
hopefully pushing on
they'll have an eye on GP3 if you're in any of those really so that's all I was trying to say about the Women's Championship thing is because you're right in saying if a female driver comes forward it needs to be good. I know, I didn't mean to say it then, I'm sorry about that. And
she will need to be good.
And I think the Women's Championship would give us more chance to find that, good female drivers. Not someone that's going to come in, do really badly, and then have people like Bernie Eccleston going, fucking told you so.
The other argument... possibly in favour of a women's championship. Being white middle class male, I know dick all about sexism, really.
Yeah.
But an argument that's made about the pay gap in general is that the way men and women go about negotiations is very different. Now, if that holds through to negotiating to get sponsorship,
Then that is going to
negatively affect women.
Yeah, it's very, very good point.
So having a female only championship would get sponsors hooked up with women drivers.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, who do we know is a Formula One driver now? For example, I'm just throwing out that for example, who has a daughter?
Formula One driver now.
Or
the only one I can think of is Keke Rosberg.
Brittany Rosberg. That's another thing. That's another thing completely different. Transgender form.
We're just getting too politically correct here.
I think of him more as a eunuch.
Oh, good lord. Yeah, we've gone too far.
The living
is unique, yes.
Unico Rosberg.
Shall we move on and talk about something else? The last thing that we've got on the list tonight is actually it's a question for our listener. We are putting out an appeal.
We are putting out an appeal. We want your ideas for features for our podcast, like the Pasta Disaster Predictor, as we discussed earlier, might not be a thing come March. Pasta might not be around in Formula One anymore.
Yeah, so we need something to replace it. We've chewed over a couple of ideas.
And we want to keep Captain Obvious if we can.
We'll keep the Captain Obvious award because people are always going to come out with things like that. One of Chris's ideas was...
Is K-Mag actually any good? Where if Kevin Magnussen does replace Pasta Maldonado, basically we analyse and we ask the question at the end of the podcast. So, is K-Mag actually any good?
If
and we answer yes or no.
Can we call the what would we call it?
K-Mag or K-Fed?
No. K-Mag or K-Slag?
K-Mag or
that's
K-Slag?
That's not bad. The other one that I came up with was what gets more TV time, a manor or a spanner?
Yes, because...
Do you see more inside garage shots than you do manor cars on track during the race?
Well, that would be yes, every single race.
Yeah, that's the only problem with that one.
There's more garages than there are manor cars.
Yeah.
They're also, the garages are generally faster.
So, yeah, if you've got any ideas for new features for the podcast for the 2016 season, drop us a tweet at Three Legs, Four Wheels and let us know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be anything to do, you know, toys out of the pram,
Tantrum of the Week award.
Yeah, Tantrum of the Week.
And there's always competitor for that. Let's add that to the list.
Yeah.
There's also the
Nico Rosberg Tantrum of the Week award.
If one of our listeners that could, through the course of the year, fancies coming in and having a chat with us as well, and we could do a special podcast now and again with a listener in.
Maybe. That's that might be an idea.
If there's any interest for it, I'm sure we could.
If you're up for embarrassing yourself on a laptop.
And being wrong. Yep.
Yeah. You can always, if you're not local to us, you can always dial in on Skype.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we are open to suggestions. I think that about covers it for this week.
I reckon.
Bit of a surprise one. We'll be back.
Whenever.
Next Monday.
Probably next Monday if there's news. Without Dan, because he's off being a secret agent again.
Oh no, this is holiday.
Oh right, okay. Going anywhere nice?
Vegas.
So no then.
So you're going on holiday. That's just what a secret agent would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we... man missing in Taiwan. Well, hang on a second. Dan, are you sure you're in Vegas?
Dan, missing in Taiwan.
We'll leave it there. So we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.